Support for Culture Q comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Welcome to Culture Q, the art show that rocks. I'm your host, Ryan Wilson. This week, we look into Muslim culture at the University of Minnesota, sexism in the world of bikes, and preview some summer album releases. Tickets are free, and there's no wait, as we check out what's going down in the Twin Cities this week on Culture Q. The University of Minnesota is a culturally diverse place. That doesn't necessarily mean students are completely understanding or accepting of all cultures. Mark Sheely reports on Muslim students' attempts to bring a little more understanding to campus.
Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen. Before we dive right into the event, I'm just going to go over a few terms that I might be using throughout the event.
The room in which Sister Sarah Abdullahav is making an introduction is fairly small, only about the size of an average classroom. And for the amount of people gathered, this room is crowded. After a few more words and a recited blessing to the audience, Sister and PhD candidate Aisha Wuswus takes the floor. But before she even begins her lecture, she makes a stunning remark about the room.
Of course, one thing I would want to comment on the way the group is seated is that I could see the Muslims sitting away from the rest of the group. I just told Sister Sarah that that wouldn't be a good idea. Since we're doing some kind of an Islamic Awareness Week, we should actually have the Muslims more go in with the rest of the public.
I see Sister Aisha's remark about the seating of the room as an accurate summary of the relationship between Muslims and non-Muslims at the University of Minnesota. Two groups of people, both going to the same school, but at the same time isolated from one another because of misconceptions and a lack of understanding. To help build an understanding of Islam on campus, the Muslim Student Association, along with the Somali Student Association, held Islam Awareness Week, with two events in particular illuminating women in Islam. One was a lecture given by Sister Aisha Wuswus, and the other was an event held the day before aimed at giving non-Muslim women the opportunity to sport a particular Muslim garment. Just what piece of clothing are these women admiring? It's the hijab, a term that refers both to the Muslim woman's headscarf, as well as the actual expression of modesty in clothing and behavior among Muslim men and women. During hijabi for a day, women were invited to come up, pick out a hijab of their own, then make a pledge to wear it for the remainder of the day. Again, Sister Sarah Abdullahav.
Islam sees the woman as a beautiful creature and asks her to respect herself and her body and her character by having maybe what people might say is more strict regulations, but boys have to do it as well, and it's for both men and women.
What are some of the differences in regulations concerning modesty between men and women?
So, like I said before, Islam does see the woman as more as like a creature that's more beautiful, or like the female body is more beautiful than the male's body, which is why she is asked to cover, you know, cover her head as well, cover her hair, but also be modest in clothing. However, for men as well, they are also not allowed. We have regulations for them. They're not allowed to show anything from navel to knee. But if it's going to pose a problem, if it's going to cause some kind of like what we call fitna, it's like something that would be kind of controversial, if someone, they should pretty much cover. Has to be loose clothing, nothing that's, you know, tight, figure binding, that type of thing.
At their booth in front of the Kauffman Student Union were rows and rows of hijabs of all sorts of colors, textures, designs, and fabrics. But unfortunately for myself, I couldn't personally partake in hijabi for a day. However, I was able to talk to Amanda, who had just recently picked out a hijab of her own.
What was it that brought you out here today?
I have a lot of Muslim friends, and I think it's kind of important for people to recognize that it is a very peaceful religion.
Do you think that wearing the hijab that you'll be treated differently?
Probably. From what I've heard from a lot of my non-Muslim friends, there's a lot of anti-Muslim feelings from misunderstandings, and so wearing the hijab, it's probably going to bring a different perspective on things.
Overall, the women putting on hijabi for a day would hope that rather than be viewed as women oppressed by their faith, that they instead be viewed as women proud of their faith. And, like many of us, working to receive an education. Women like Sister Munna Hussein.
Westerners think the big thing is women are oppressed. And I think as a Muslim woman, I'll say to anybody that will ask me today, I am not oppressed. Because I go to school, I want to become something, I want to be a productive member of society and everything like that. So just to say that, you know what, there's a role women play and there's a role that men play. And in the eyes of God, women and men are equal. But there are certain things that women can do and there's certain things man can do. That's just how humans are created.
Though it'll still take much time to build an understanding between Muslims and non-Muslims on campus, the sisters putting on hijabi for a day feel that the event was a success. Hundreds of Muslim women walked away with both a hijab and a greater understanding of the Muslim women around them. And even I walked away with something. An early birthday present for my sister. For Culture Q, I'm Mark Sheely.
Hey, welcome back to Culture Q. This is Ryan Wilson, and I'm joined today by Sarah Bowden to do this week's Top 7. Sarah, what do we have for this week's list?
Hey, Ryan. Today's Top 7 is the top 7 things to do in the Twin Cities when it's raining for under $7.
All right. Yeah, there's been a lot of rain this week, and it's sure to rain some more, so always a good thing to have in the back of your head. Let's start off with the number 7 thing to do.
Number 7 is movie matinees.
Oh, yeah. There's lots of great theaters around here, both if you want to see studio pictures or some indie flicks.
And
always a good
option.
And the
thing is, if you hit the time right, like you can get in for some places for under $5, even like $2 or $3. Just do your research.
All right. Yep. Check them out. And number 6.
Number 6 is the Bell Museum. Free to students. On Sundays, it's free to everyone. For the public, it's $2 to $3, depending on your age. And I don't know. I think it's great. You can meet live snakes and turtles and salamanders and see a bunch of taxidermied animals in quasi-real poses. I enjoy it.
Yes. I actually had a class in there once.
Oh, what was that like?
It was a creative writing class. I'm not sure why we had it in the Bell Museum.
Were you inspired by all the death of the taxidermy animals everywhere?
I was inspired to take a nap usually every day. Let's move on, though, to number 5.
Number 5, we have playing chess at the Hard Times Cafe.
Oh, yeah. There's lots of games you can play over at the Hard Times Cafe.
You can play Chinese chess at the Hard Times Cafe.
Is it Chinese chess or Chinese checkers?
Oh, it's Chinese checkers.
Okay.
You can also play normal checkers.
Lots of good stuff. And get some great coffee, too. What are we on? Number 4?
Number 4 is ice skating. Free ice skating at the various arenas around the area.
Oh, yeah. There's tons of places to ice skate around in the Twin Cities. And I personally like to go to Augsburg College.
Why do you like going there?
Because the Mighty Ducks was filmed. Some scenes were filmed at Augsburg College.
Wow. So
that's my favorite.
So do you have a thing for Emilio Estevez?
Well, he's a great coach, obviously. And for that reason only. Let's move on to number 3.
Number 3 is people watching on Metro Transit. Will cost you $2.75 tops if it's rush hour.
Okay. This is not something I have partaken in, but apparently, Sarah, you are more of an expert on this activity.
I do. I recommend bus lines like the 2. The 16 is always good. Sometimes the 18 can deliver, depending on the time of day.
Okay. Be careful, though.
Yeah, be careful.
I would recommend you be careful doing this activity. but if you're brave, go for it.
Well, you know.
Okay, Sarah, what's the number two thing to do on a rainy day?
Number two, you're going to need your galoshes and an umbrella, but it's really awesome. You go to the sculpture garden at the Walker.
Oh, yeah, lots of cool sculptures at the Walker. It's free. It's outdoors. You'll need an umbrella. But I think the reason to go on a rainy day is really no one else will be there. You'll have the whole park to yourself.
So you can linger, be as loud as you want, just waterproof it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a little rain.
Just a little rain.
And the number one thing to do in the Twin Cities on a rainy day for under $7.
Go to the Central Library.
Oh, always a great place to go. There's a lot to do there. Obviously, reading books is one option and magazines, but there's other things you can do at the library.
There are a lot of things you can do at the Central Library. For example, it's architecturally astounding. The atrium is really echoey, so you can yell loud and it makes fun noises. The top floor, the fourth floor, offers an excellent bird's eye view of downtown Minneapolis. Lots of cool stuff.
Yes, there's some sculptures in there and things
there
of that nature.
There are sculptures.
And of course, books. If you like reading, you can go there. But if you don't like reading, you can still go there and have a good time.
Yeah.
Well, Sarah, thank you very much for bringing us this week's top seven things to do on a rainy day in the Twin Cities for under $7.
My pleasure, Ryan.
And if you're still looking for ways to stretch a dollar, Miranda Taylor has a story for you. She talked with a few organizers of an upcoming clothing swap in the Twin Cities.
People spend copious amounts of money attempting to look stylish all the time. In an attempt to show big spenders and budget-minded people alike that money isn't the only thing that can make you look great, Minneapolis-based designers have banded together under one roof. What they have created is something that thrift store lovers will find irresistible.
Alternation, breaking down the barrier between the creator and consumer.
That's Angie Arner of Counter Couture Designs and her assistant Liz Nelson joking about Alternation's tagline. Said to occur on the 24th of this month, Alternation will be the largest clothing swap Minnesota has ever seen. What's a clothing swap? It's in the name. People trade clothes with each other, finding that perfect outfit in someone else's castaways. According to Arner, Alternation is for everyone who has ever wanted to revamp, upcycle, or trade their clothing in for something new or different.
People don't really know what to expect. It's a little bit like, okay, it's a clothing swap and all this other stuff, but it's really exciting, and I think people are really going to grasp onto this, and it's something that people are going to create a demand for.
DJing, hair and makeup consultations, a photo booth, local designers' collections, two eco-fashion shows, and screen printing will all be available at the swap. According to one local designer, Christy Gianago, who will be staffing the event, old clothing can serve to inspire. Her face lights up as she lays out the basics of remaking.
Sometimes it's combining two dresses into one if I want two different colors. Sometimes it's taking it apart at the seams and starting from scratch, or cutting patterns from the fabric, or sometimes it's using parts, combining parts.
Arner thinks clothing swaps have the potential to become the Tupperware party of the 2010s. Goodbye plastic storage containers. Hello, eco-friendly wardrobe choices. Arner is
making them think differently about the way they spend their dollar and how they buy their clothing. So not only what they put on their body, but where is this coming from?
$5 cash gets you into next Saturday's event, which is set up as a barter system. For every piece you bring in, you will get to take a piece out. If you plan on making an appearance at Alternation, your jewelry, clothes, and accessories, and more accessories will be accepted on Earth Day or on the day of the event at the Grain Belt Bottling House in Northeast Minneapolis's Art District. That's where the swapping will happen, too.
You could completely see somebody else walking down the street in something that you donated, or just the notion that, you know, somebody else is wearing it and loving it is and recycling it back into the neighborhoods is a really cool aspect of it.
Oh, and don't forget to bring a bag to Alternation. You are most definitely going to want something to put all those newfound treasures in. Unless, of course, you plan to wear them out. For Culture Q, I'm Miranda Taylor.
Maybe I thought
This is Culture Q. I'm Ryan Wilson. Like most things, music has gone digital. The iPod and iTunes store dominate the music world, and many people turn to the internet for their favorite songs. But some sentimental types still say you can't beat owning a physical CD or vinyl record. This week's question of the week is, do you still go to brick-and-mortar record stores?
My name is Jeff, and the last time I was in a record store was in November. And I still think they have a place in music, even though they're not being used as much.
Hi, my name is Christy, and the last time I was in a record store was probably about a year ago. But even so, I still believe that records are relevant today. They are a part of history, and even in their imperfection, they remind people of where music came from and where it has gone from there. And I just think it's a great piece of history, and I would hate to see it disappear off the face of the earth.
Occasionally I'll download stuff illegally. I like to purchase full albums. I don't like to download that illegally, but if it is a favorite band of mine, I don't only purchase it like through iTunes, but I'll actually buy the CD and have a physical copy of that. I like that still.
All right, my name is Amanda, and the last time I was in a record store was about 2 months ago, and I do still think that's very relevant in our culture today because it's so important as a part of our history, and the sound quality is different, and you just can't get that with a CD. Like, yeah, there may be like bumps and scratches, but that's kind of a whole part of the whole listening.
Last week, Bicycle Magazine named Minneapolis the number one bike city in the country. But even here in the land of bikes, women say the culture can make them feel like second-class citizens. Sarah Bowden went to a women and transgender bike night to find out why.
For a lot of women, bike maintenance gets tricky when they're in between boyfriends. It's not that women don't want to learn, but walking into a bike shop can be intimidating, especially if you're a girl.
Like I said, I'm from California, and so I kind of just walked in. I swaggered in, thinking, oh, I'm just going to, you know, work on my bike and talk's bike. And I all of a sudden, I hit this, you know, I don't know, I hit a wall, and I said, oh, I get it. I'm a girl.
Ashanti Austin grew up in a Black and Latino community in Southern California, which had a very different bike culture from the Twin Cities. In the pristine Midwest, Austin encountered a bike shop sexism that hadn't been an issue on the West Coast.
And that took me a while to deal with emotionally in this space, because it's a psychological mind bleep.
Austin sits on the board for the Sibley Bike Depot. Sibley is a community center / bike shop located in Frogtown on University Avenue. At Sibley, every Tuesday night is Women and Transgender Night, which takes place from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m.
When women actually do find out that there's a space that they can go to work on their bikes without having to feel intimidated about coming into a space that's traditionally male-centered, to wrench, you know, as we say, then they'll come, and they do come.
Explain wrenching.
Working on bikes, picking up a wrench and doing what traditionally men are considered able to do and women aren't considered able to do.
On Tuesdays, women can ask questions and make mistakes without feeling stupid.
You don't just get to come here and get it fixed. It doesn't work like that. You actually work with Alicia or myself or any other volunteer, and you learn how to do it in a very, very intimidation-free zone. You know, you get to ask questions and be afraid.
The Alicia Austin mentions is Alicia Dvorak, one of Sibley's two staff mechanics. While we talk, Dvorak wrenches on a mountain bike, giving it a once-over before it's released to the public. The mechanic also runs into issues because of her gender.
Even people who are regular volunteers will send people who walk in to help for a guy, even if they're not Jeremy, who's the other staff mechanic, even if I'm standing right there. At the same time, I help somebody with a bike, and they're like, wow, that's awesome. Like, don't see a lot of women helping people with their bikes, you know, so... Every day, both, yeah.
And how does that make you feel when either reaction happens?
I don't like it, obviously, when somebody ignores me to talk to a man. because they don't know. But I don't think it's done maliciously or even consciously.
No, not all men who ride bikes are sexist. But each woman I spoke with on Tuesday night said that at one time or another, she had felt the effects of male ego when it came to her bike.
My name is Anne DeGaulier. I am a student at the University of Minnesota, and this is actually just my second time here. I am just here to try to make my derailleur work today.
According to DeGaulier, this sexism can come at a cost. Literally.
The first flat I fixed by myself, I ruined 4 tubes before I got it right because I didn't want to have to go ask for help. And so I'm able to figure things out on my own, but it's better to get help from other people that know what they're doing so I don't have to waste stuff. I've been afraid to ask for help sometimes because I don't want people to think that just because I need help with this one thing, I'm a complete moron.
Walking into Women and Transgender Night can be a healing experience because having a safe, judgment-free zone seems too good to be true.
On our website, there's a place to email me, and I'll just get questions from women. I see you have a women's night, and they'll still ask, is it safe for me to come in? Can I come and work on my bike? I have a flat tire. Can I... You know, just simple questions where the answer is always yes, but what they're really looking for is it really safe for me to walk in? I've tried this before. And the answer is yes.
While Sibley didn't invent the idea of a woman in transgender night, according to Austin, similar nights at other locations have failed because there isn't an understanding that men aren't invited.
That night is never understood as a women's night only. Like, men will come into the shop who know that it's a women in trans night, will walk in the shop and start wrenching on their bike because they have one more thing to do. You know, we just have one thing to do. It's no big deal. I'm going to go in and come out. And they don't understand the concept that the space isn't for them anymore.
At Sibley on Tuesdays, this is not the case.
We will actually turn men away, regardless of the consequences. We may lose their business, we may not see them again, but we will turn them away, and we guard it fiercely.
Unfortunately, as DeGaulier will tell you, Sibley's progressive attitude is the exception and not the norm when it comes to bikes in the Twin Cities.
A lot of males notice that I'm a female and feel that in order to prove their manhood, they need to be faster than me or in front of me.
Do you ever, like, egg them on? Like, oh, no, you don't, Buster.
Sometimes I'll ride behind them for a while until I see them getting really tired, and then I'll come up on them and act like I'm trying really hard to pass them, and then they'll try really hard for a while, and then I'll pass them really quick and let it be done, but that's fun.
Hopefully, enough people will pedal out of Sibley that eventually everyone can ride their own pace on the Greenway. For Culture Q, I'm Sarah Bowden.
This is Culture Q. I'm Ryan Wilson. We're starting to see signs of summer. The days are longer, people are happier, and music just sounds better. I love throwing on a new CD in my car, rolling the windows down, and cruising the Twin Cities. With albums to look for this summer, here's Zach McCormick.
There's nothing in the world quite like that perfect summer album, the kind of record you can play back endlessly whilst you bask in all the pleasures our fair city's warmer months have to offer. Here are some releases that Radio K is excited to share with you this summer. Here We Go Magic was originally a four-track solo project from Boston come Brooklyn muralist Luke Temple and has now expanded to a full band, blending elements of folk, baroque pop, and afrobeat under the hazy sheen of lo-fi. The band was recently picked up by indie label Secretly Canadian for their sophomore effort entitled Pigeon, due out June 8th. You're listening to a track called Collector. Tobacco, frontman for the wildly popular indie electronic outfit Black Moth Super Rainbow, made a splash in 2008 with his solo debut, earning critical acclaim and newfound popularity. On the forthcoming album Maniac Meat, Tobacco cranks the swag up a notch with pounding hip-hop drums and crunchy analog synths. Here's the song Sweat Mother, release date May 25th. LCD Sound System mastermind James Murphy has a lot on his plate these days, what with being an all-star producer and record label head. But the master of disco snark has apparently found some extra time to complete LCD's brand new album titled This Is Happening, due out May 17th. Murphy claims that this is his best album yet, and if the tracks are as catchy as this one, we're inclined to believe him. Here's a preview of the effortlessly funky new song, Drunk Girls. This is Zach McCormick for Culture Q.
That brings us to the end of Culture Q. Today you heard stories from Mark Sheely, Miranda Taylor, Sarah Bowden, and Zach McCormick. I'm Ryan Wilson. Check us out at RadioK.org and Twitter, and tune in for more reasons why the Twin Cities rock. Next time on Culture Q. Support for Culture Q comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.